Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Good to have you all with us today. We are going to start off the conversation, the first part of our program, about the resignation of the Pope. That hasn't happened since 1415. As many people are joking, popes don't resign. So we'll talk about that in the first part of our program. Then we are going to look at Chris Dorner in Los Angeles, the LAPD, and the controversy around that. And then give you a conversation that we taped a little bit ago, right around the Israeli elections. And why it's important is not because it's the Israeli election, but because these are Israelis who have said, we are going to give our vote to Palestinians on the West Bank. Let them tell us how to vote. Well, the people who did that never met one another. So we brought them together in conversation. And that's part of our program as well. All this coming up. But first, we turn this over to WEA Traffic. Check on the roads here in Baltimore. And as I always say, if you're listening to us from someplace else, just put up other traffic. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Good to have you all with us today. You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA-FM, home of the Baltimore Blend, weekdays from 6 to 8 a.m. that I happily co-host once a month when we do our remotes at a local coffee shop. I want to remind you The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it is a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Information can be found at www.mecu.com. So we are going to begin this conversation today talking about the resignation of the Pope, Pope Benedict. It is the first resignation of a Pope in 598 years. I think a couple of centuries before that happened, another resignation took place, went back and forth between Pope Benedict the Ninth, oddly enough, and Pope Gregory the Sixth. That's another story. We don't have to go into today unless there's a reason to bring it up. But here we have Pope Benedict the Sixteenth, who has resigned. I think that, as people have said over and over again after this happened, that popes just don't resign. They pass away. John Paul II was very ill towards the end, could barely stand straight after he was the attempted assassination. He went from this vigorous physical figure to a man doubled over often, but kept on talking, bent, and kept on going to the day he drew his last breath as Pope. So many people are speculating, why is this happening? Pope said he's tired. He's not able to lead a billion Catholics in the world. Others are saying there's something else afoot, and we will talk about all that. So we have a series of guests with us here in the studio. Rosemary Thompson, who is executive director of the Murphy Initiative, as a common voice of 14 religious communities to work collaboratively for social justice and to support and supplement the ongoing justice and peace work within each community. And Rosemary Thompson, who I've known for 20 years, who has been on the show many times over the years, has been active in a lot of Catholic activist movements in our community, and joins us in the studio. Good to see you, Rosemary. Welcome.
Hey, Mark. Thank you.
We're joined by Monsignor Stuart Sweatland, who is the Vice President of Catholic Identity at Mount St. Mary's University. Monsignor, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
It's good to be with you.
LaWanda Edwards joins us. She's a Catholic churchgoer and activist and political activist here in this town, and joins us by phone because she's stuck in Annapolis. LaWanda, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. Jump on our Facebook pages and see what you have to say there. If Leo Burrows is listening, I hope he calls in today. We tried to call you earlier, Leo, to see if you want to be a guest on the show, since you yourself have been a Catholic activist as well. We may be joined in a little while by Mary Jo McConaughey, who we're trying to get hold of. She's in El Salvador. We're trying to get a Skype thing working so she can hear us. We can hear her. She's a journalist and documentary filmmaker and author of Maya Rhodes, One Woman's Journey Among the People of the Rainforest, which is currently available in bookstores and online, and has a lot to say about the Latin American church and South America. So good to have you all with us. 410-319-8888 is the number here. So this is unprecedented, really. I mean, to have a Pope resign, it's been a very, in his short tenure, to 8 years, it's been a controversial papacy, Papacy. in terms of, we'll talk a bit about those things that have come up, everything from when he was accused of insulting Muslims on a trip to Germany to reinstating the Bishop Richard Williamson, who was a breakaway bishop who denies facts about the Holocaust. He told reporters once in a papal plane that when going towards Africa, the condoms helped spread AIDS. All these kind of things happen, and of course, not to leave out the huge thing, which is the clerical sexual abuse scandals that spread across Europe and the United States and exploded really at his door when he became Pope. So all that and more that we'll be talking about, and the leaking documents that took place that kind of put his bureaucracy at fray, frayed his democracy at the edges, I'd say, bureaucracy. So it really is impressive. But Monsignor, to talk about the unprecedented nature of this, this whole idea of a Pope resigning.
Well, it is, as you pointed out in your introduction, it hasn't happened in six centuries. And I find it, as a priest, I find it heroic and also instructive. It's heroic because he's admitting in a very humble and courageous way that the demands of the office are getting beyond his physical ability to fulfill them. And as we see in sports and in other walks of life, people having the personal humility and courage to be able to say it's time to walk away and let someone else do the job, that isn't as often achieved with such grace as I think Benedict is showing us. And it's instructive because I think it's for all of us in the pastoral ministry a reminder that there's a time to let governance be handled by other people, and there's a time to enter into a different part of our vocation, a time of prayer and preparation for what Catholics historically call making a happy or holy death. And so we're seeing that in his example, personal example, both as a pastor and as a Christian.
Luanda, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us. Talk a bit about your perception of this.
Hello?
Go ahead, Luanda.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you very well at first. I'm in Baltimore, and I have been attending. I've been a Catholic since I was probably 10, and have been in Catholic school, and I just and I'm very active in my church and in the Charles Village community. So this resignation of Pope is very, it's very interesting to me, and I'm humbled by it as well. I think that he's done a good thing by admitting that it's just too much for him. So we're all very anxiously awaiting to see, who will be the next pope and what direction that they will be taking, the Catholic Church in.
And let me welcome Mary Jo Connie, who is with us from El Salvador, a journalist, documentary filmmaker, author of the book Maya Rhodes, One Woman's Journey Among the People of the Rainforest. Joins us via Skype from El Salvador. And Mary Jo McConaughey, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It's a pleasure. I'm glad you could join us. Good. We got these kinks worked out, and here you are. Marvelous team across the glass we have here. So to talk about your perception of what's going on here, and I read what you wrote. It was an interesting piece you wrote about the resignation, also, but more about the state of Catholicism in Latin America and the kind of rift in some ways between many Latin American Catholics and the Vatican.
Right. Well, this is a region where what's called liberation theology was very strong at one time. More people are poor here than are not poor. Liberation theology takes the Bible and especially the life of Christ, and it applies, you apply it to your own life. And it's a very, very rich process. And the very poor find a lot of identification, a lot of continuity in the life of Christ and their own. Nevertheless, the official church, especially Cardinal Ratzinger, who became the Pope who has just resigned, was in a position to condemn it at one time for various reasons, and he did, And so there's a bit of a split there. People still go to church, they're still Catholic, but there's a bit of a distance between those who do believe in that and others who feel a bit abandoned, shall we say, by their church.
And Rosemary, I'll let you jump in here. You always have a lot to say. your thoughts on this resignation and what it means?
Well, I think it's an opportunity, and I think that's what I'm excited about, is that it's an opportunity for the church to return to the gospel. So in the God of my understanding, the nonviolent Jesus, is somebody who wants me to visit the imprisoned, to care for the poor. I don't see my church doing that nearly enough, and I will say that the orders of men and religious women are doing that, but I think this is an opportunity for the Vatican to direct people back to the very thing that Jesus called us to do, which is to love one another and to serve one another, and to remember that 50 years ago this fall, Vatican II opened with a pope who said, no agenda, open the windows, and we're going to let the Holy Spirit guide us. And if at the end of our conference I don't have a job, that's okay. If this is a time for the pope not to be relevant, then I would be willing to do that with consensus. And so I've worked out of my activist spirit has always been fed by my Catholicism, my Irish Catholicism, my heroes of Dorothy Day and Thomas Merton, Father Daniel Berrigan, Dorothy Stang. I mean, there's just so many people that have taught me how to live my life as a Catholic. And I hope and pray that this is a moment of unity. But it's the poor that we're supposed to be focused on.
So, and I think we have also a call here from Leo. Leo Burrows is on the line. Leo, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Mark Steiner and everyone, how are you?
Very well. I called you earlier to get your thoughts on this.
Yes, I'm of the opinion that it's a great opportunity, as I've heard others say, to bring a social reform gospel to the Catholic Church. I hope and pray that they certainly will elect a younger pope, one who's activist enough to ensure that we bring justice to the oppressed and poor peoples of this planet with the same kind of gospel that Martin Luther King Jr. promoted as a social reform church activist. I think that heterosexuality is very, very important. I'd like to see and hope that they will change this business of total abstinence on the part of priests and allow priests to do what I consider to be the normal thing, which is to marry if they so choose. I think that when you don't do that, then you open yourself to continued pedophilia among some of your priests and or homosexuality among some of your priests. And I think we should do the normal kinds of things and champion what I define as the normal kinds of things. Well, which speak in that vein.
We have a diverse, an array of opinions here. So let me just talk about some of the things that we see here. And when you have 42% of the Catholic Church living in Latin America or the Caribbean in that area, when you have another 12% in Asia, 13% of Catholics living in Africa, 8% in Canada, in the United States, and another 25% in Europe, and dwindling numbers, and as they project this over the next by 2025, they're projecting that number will drop by 5% in Europe and drop by 1% in North America, and grow in Africa and in Asia especially. So and growth in places like the Philippines and the Republic of the Congo and Mexico. So what does that mean about who might be pope or who should be pope? Is that part of what happens when you have Monsignor, when we have half the College of Cardinals being European and many of them being Italian? There was a day when the church, you know, was really Rome, and then secondarily it was Ireland. But that's changed. So how does this move in choosing a new pope? Should it? Does it? Can it? Do you think, will it reflect that?
Well, first, just for clarity's sake, and I'm glad to have everybody's voice, but Benedict XVI was an eloquent voice for the Church's social teaching. And I don't want anyone to get the impression that he was not. His encyclical on charity is one of the most profound modern social documents, something I teach at the university. It's the church's social teaching. And he was a champion of an authentic liberation theology, one that was purified of Marxist ideology, which, of course, we know Marxism is a false ideology that has an incorrect vision of the human person. So in that sense, the church has called for an authentic theology of liberation, as John Paul II did in Centissimus Agnos, as Benedict has in his encyclicals on the social teaching of the church. And the next pope's going to continue that tradition. He's to call Christians to live authentically, the preferential option for the poor, and all the aspects of the church's social teaching, which is defending human life in all forms, from conception to natural death, defending the dignity of marriage as a sacrament of the church, defending both the tradition of the church, which comes to us from the apostles and from Jesus himself, and applying it in the new situation that the church finds itself. Cardinal Ratzinger, when he was a young theologian, was president of the council and was one of the first and most important commentators on the council as a theologian. The next pope will probably be the first time we have a pope who wasn't present at the council, and that will be a change. It's going to be a generational change. And now we'll have to apply the teachings of the Second Vatican Council in a new way to the third millennium, especially addressing the question of the new evangelization, how we bring the gospel of Jesus Christ into dialogue with the modern world, especially a world that's increasingly at threat by the dangers of war. I mean, today we're talking at a time when North Korea has exploded a nuclear device against every protocol, against every treaty, against every aspect of the United Nations Security Council and the United Nations General Assembly's rules. And so we're looking at a situation where the world is quickly spinning towards some really dangerous situations. We need a voice for someone who's the vicar of the Prince of Peace.
Mary Jo, let me ask you to jump in here and go to other guests as well, because I want you to comment on that, especially with the conversation about liberation theology.
Right. I think the original question was, if I understood correctly, something about in choosing the next pope, ought it be taken into consideration that the global south is where the growth of Catholicism is, and what does that mean about, you know, the fact that over 50% of those who are choosing the next pontiff are from Europe. You know, one thing that Catholics say is that the church is one and universal. I don't think that it would certainly matter that the in many ways that the next pontiff would be, for instance, a person of color or a person from the global south. It oughtn't matter, but we're human beings and we come from different experiences. No matter, for instance, when these gentlemen went to the seminary and all of that, they come from a place. They know a place. I think just the fact that people came, you know, grew up in Africa, grew up in Latin America, gives them a different viewpoint, and it gives the faithful on the ground, I think, a real the image of someone that looks like them in the pontiff's hat and in the red robes, I think makes a connection that can't be made any other way. With regard to liberation theology, Pope John Paul II shared many themes of liberation theology in his important encyclicals. He was critical of capitalism. He did not condemn it, of course. But he thought it had to be much, much more tempered with social justice. And he was often critical of dependency and exploitation. What has happened in the wake of these terrible wars, 200,000 killed in Guatemala, 75,000 killed right here in El Salvador, is that the promise of the new administrations, the neoliberalism, the capitalism, has just been a disappointment. The gaps are very wide, and people need a faith that speaks to them, speaks to their poverty. It speaks to a certain lack of hope. They went through all of this, and what is the result? And for many, the way that the gospel is spoken about in these small groups among the poor, which is in the lines of liberation theology, answers these needs.
I know, Luanda, I know that you have to go in a few minutes. Let me let you get a word in here before you have to go, and then we'll turn to our other guests.
Okay. Well, I have to say I'm excited about the opportunity to see the progress that the church is going to try to make in choosing a new pope. I think it is an opportunity to maybe have someone that will be more that will have women to be more inclusive as part of the church, maybe just bringing us a little bit closer into, you know, the 21st century. So I'm optimistic. I think it's an important time. I see a lot of people in my church that have been leaving, which is very frustrating to someone like myself who has a strong faith. And we'd like to be more welcoming and inclusive. I'd like to have more of, you know, of like colleagues and community neighbors, you know, coming back, you know, to our church. So I'm really looking forward to it and anxiously awaiting. I don't think it's going to be, I'd be surprised if it's going to be, the Pope will be chosen from America, but it's humbling to even realize that a person of color could even be considered, you know, Pope in this day and age. I happen to be African-American, and I think it's just wonderful, whoever we get, but that's just kind of how I feel about it at the moment.
I think it's important that we recognize, too, that, you know, if we go back to a Pope of color, it won't be the first. There are at least three of our early popes were from Africa. In the early church, and so this wouldn't be unprecedented.
That's an interesting point. In the 21st century, we'll see where that takes us. And I think some of the things that we want to talk about when we come back from this very brief break, and I want to thank you, Luanda Edwards, for being with us, is to really wrestle with. Thank you very much. Where the church is going, what it is facing with the rise of evangelical Protestantism in both Africa and Latin America. With people being disaffected in the church in the West, who want a more liberal church, and many are kind of not going to church or dropping off in their own way, who have become pro-choice in America, the majority of Catholics, to the conservative liberation, conservative liberal split. It's going on in the church. Like, it's going on in many religions today. It's going on inside of Islam, even though people don't talk about it a great deal. It's going on inside of the Jewish religion. It's going on clearly inside the Anglican religion, and is going on inside of Catholicism in a major way. So what does that mean for the future of the church, and what this next pope will confront, and what you would expect out of the next pope, given what the 21st century is going to bring for the Roman Catholic Church? We're going to explore all that and more when we come back, so don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We have an announcement to make on our way back to our conversation. The Creative City Public Charter School is a new progressive elementary school located in the Park Heights community that uses hands-on learning and arts integration. It's now accepting applications for kindergarten to second grade. A lottery application deadline is March the 1st. And more information, it can be found at www.creativecityschool.com. And we'll also put that on our website. It's going to be one of the most amazing new schools in our community. Maybe you'll be lucky enough to have one of your children go to that school in our Park Heights community. We are going to go back to our conversation about the Catholic Church and what's going to happen now that Pope Benedict has resigned. Pope Benedict the 16th, I should say, has resigned. What will come next? We are joined by Mary Jo McConaughey, who is a journalist and documentary filmmaker, living and joining us from El Salvador, author of the book Maya Roads, One Woman's Journey Among the People of the Rainforest, which is currently available in bookstores and online, and we'll connect to it on our website, steinershow.org. Rosemary Thompson's in the studio. She's executive director of the Murphy Initiative, as a common voice of 14 religious communities working collaboratively for social justice and to support and supplement the ongoing justice and peace work within each community. And Rosemary Thompson has been an activist in the Catholic Church in this community since she was 14. She's only about 20 now.
Plus 50.
And Monsignor Stuart Swetland is with us, Vice President of Catholic Identity at Mount St. Mary's University. We're also joined by Leo Burrows, who's been a Catholic activist, a member of the Catholic Church his whole life. He and I were civil rights activists back in the 60s in the Civic Interest Group, which was like Baltimore SNCC, just to give a sense of who Leo is. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We really want you to join us with your thoughts. But let's jump into the question I raised before we went to break. The Catholic Church, like many other religions, there are going to be a lot of forces within the church talking about what the future of that church should be, whether it's around the very conservative church coming out of many parts of the African continent, to the strength of the old liberation theology, which is alive and well in Latin America, to more liberal Catholics in the Western world going, we don't like all the doctrine and we are pro-choice, pulling it from one end, to the center of the church trying to hold together the tenets that's been done in the last several popes since Pope John the 23rd, after him, I should say, and before him as well. So where do we think, Rosemary, what is this going to mean for this century and what this next pope is going to have to wrestle with?
Well, I'd really like to go back to what the Monsignor said, because I really do believe that these life issues are so important. I'm so thrilled that the Bishop Madden is so active in Baltimore with the DREAM Act, and he was very active with the death penalty issues. And so for me, there's this moment in the gospel, right, where Jesus has watched Peter cut off the ear of the soldier, and he says to Peter, and it's probably the last thing he says to a living church, is he says, put down your sword. And so I think that Jesus directs us to live our lives nonviolently, and I think that what the church is going to have to grapple with and really concretely bottom up instead of top down for a change is life. And, you know, the popes have been very strong about us putting down our sword, but not strong enough. I mean, they haven't yet condemned the drones. The war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan were both identified by popes as being not good, and that Pope John Paul said that we needed to put war beyond any use, that we could never go to war again, that it's too critical a time. So I think that that's the issue that Catholics are going to rally on, is that do we have faith or not? Do we want to live or not? And do we believe in Jesus? And if we do, then we have to really literally put down our swords with the military, with the way we spend, with the way we consume. It's every aspect of our life. It's the ecology. We have to look at sustainability as a life issue.
Mark Steiner?
Go ahead, Leo Burrows.
Yes. I just want to say this before I leave you, because I have another meeting.
Okay.
The Catholic Church has been one of the most conservative institutions theologically anywhere in the world. I guess maybe all organized religions, so to speak, are conservative. But the Catholic Church is a very financially rich institution, and it's autocratic, fundamentally. It has to denounce, the Catholic Church has to denounce the continuance of institutional racism. Jesus Christ was a revolutionary. He was a man of color. He was a black man. And he literally ran the money changers out of the temple. And I don't want us to forget that. So, I mean, we are going to have to have the courage, demonstrate the courage of our convictions by standing up against the established order. The Pharisees were attacked by Jesus, and all of those people back when, hundreds of years, thousands of years, were opposed because of the tyranny that they represented. And you have to do the same with governments, whether they're in the Western world or in South America or Latin America or anywhere else. And just a footnote, my father, Leo Burroughs Sr., was a 30-year Catholic. I'm Baptist. I'm Baptist in reality, although he expressed to me his concerns about the racism that was apparent in the Catholic Church, and he did serve on the Archdiocesan Commission appointed by Cardinal Sheehan, and a member of the St. Edward's Catholic Church mm-hmm. for a long, long time, and head of their Holy Name Society. So he was a very outspoken activist, and the individual who created the Black Lay Caucus here in Baltimore, which integrated Mercy Hospital, which at one time, as late as the 60s and late 60s, had black patients on one floor and white patients on another floor. So, and then right. my dad passed in 2007, God rest his soul. So I'm Leo Burroughs Jr., and I'm happy to have been with you today.
Thank you, Leo.
Thank you.
And keep up the good work in helping us to look at the pros and cons and how we as a society might live better collectively and in fairness and in truth.
Thank you, Leo, and I can see the apple didn't fall from the tree. So,
God bless you.
You too, Mary. All right, and so before we turn to Monsignor, Mary Jo, I'd like you to jump in here with your thoughts on the future, then we'll go to the Monsignor, then open the phones.
Yeah, you know, I just want to jump back to the Second Vatican Council. I was in Rome during that the second session of it. And I wish we could go back to that. We don't have to go back. We can have it right now with a change. Change is a hopeful time. There was such a spirit of, there are no limits. There with faith and piety, we can work together. The stressing of ecumenism. To me, we can reflect that now by looking at the different ways Catholics live their faith, and be open and sympathetic to where they're coming from to do so. The fact that the lay participation was invited, I remember at the time that was just such a knockout. Now the young Catholics just take it for granted. This is great, and I believe that at the time when we're going to be having a new pontiff is a time when we can kind of maybe go back to that fresh air of Vatican II and be very hopeful.
Monsignor, before we open the phones, please.
Well, I want to pick up on that last two themes about the young and hopeful. Being that I work at a university and teach the young, one of the things I'm finding in the young generation is a wonderful evangelical zeal for the church. There is those who choose to remain Catholic and remain faithful are in a society where that's less popular than it once was to be a person of faith. And so they want the church to be evangelical. They want the church to be what it is. And I think the one thing about Catholicism, I'm a convert to the faith, is its tendency to emphasize both and rather than either or. It's both a faith that we profess, but it's also a life lived out in charity. It's both the social teachings of the church, but those social teachings include everything. It includes the life of the unborn. It includes the life of those on death row. It includes the call to family and community and participation. It talks about rights, but it also talks about responsibilities. It's rights and responsibilities. That Catholic and. I came from a Protestant tradition that had tendency to emphasize faith alone, for example, in my Lutheran tradition I grew up in, and Lutherans are great Christians. But the beauty, I think, of Catholicism, be able to embrace the diversity you've heard today on the phone and on your show, that we're a very diverse community. I like to tell people I don't belong to any organized religion. I'm a Catholic, because we really aren't very well organized.
No.
We're very diverse, and it really is ground up. The bishops have a very important role in vocation, but it's one vocation. We all have a vocation to holiness and to sanctity and to transform our world as leaven in the world.
Let me open the phones at 410-319-8888, and I do want to come back to where I left off, which was what the Catholic Church faces in the 21st century, and how will it be addressed, and where you think it's going to go. And I think that it's a very difficult question. I think, as I said earlier, it's a more complex question than it was 40 years ago or even 50 years ago. It's more complex than when Pope John the 23rd called the Vatican II. It's more complex than it was when then Cardinal Ratzinger took on liberation theologists in Latin America that Mary Jo has written about and other people have written about, because there's so many tendencies within the church, and part of it is ethnic, part of it is regional. It's ideological. It's a different interpretation of what faith means, and the question of women and married priests. All this is all part of the struggle going on. And what does that mean for the 21st century? Where does the church go? Can it go? Is the question. Let's go to the phones. I really want to wrestle with that before the end of the hour in a very honest way with the three of you. 410-319-8888 is the number here. As we look at what it means to have a pope resign and a new pontiff to be named by Easter, I think it's that, correct? Will, you're on the air.
Good evening, everyone.
Hi, Will.
I'm just listening to the conversation. It's a great conversation, and it's a great conversation to be addressed in this particular day and time. Now, I'm from more geared toward the Pentecostal church, but I'm looking at coming from, like, we be saved, you know, when I look at the Bible, and the Bible tells us about being saved. So from being transitioned into coming out of a concerned society of living a life of disobedience and coming into obedience, learning Christ, and looking at how the church as a whole, when you look at it, I heard the guy that said he had to go to a meeting was talking about the way you look at color, what color Christ was. I don't think it has a whole lot of ideology to do with color. It's more so geared toward how much love can we share, because ultimately that was Christ's whole mission, to share love to the world. You know, he gave his life for the world. So when I look at what's going on in our society, I think the most biggest demon in our society is the prejudice or demon, because we really don't want to show love when it comes to other ethnic groups, because it's the fear of the unknown. And until we really sit down, I hate when people put up a facade and acting like they really smiling at me, when behind it all, if I get amongst a whole collaboration of another ethnic group, I can feel the hostility, and it's no love. I don't care if I come into a church, I can feel the difference in it. So I think it's more so, I like what Colonel Keeler did when he was in Baltimore. He actually walked to the Inner Harbor, and he really got out amongst the people. Now, if I can go into the secular world, Donald Schaefer did the same identical thing. Until we take off these phony clothes and be who we are, we're never going to reach the people that really don't know Christ. So
Well, I appreciate you being part of the conversation. Thank you so much for your thoughts. Also thinking in the context of what Will just said, but I'm curious where we think this takes the 21st century church. I want to get back to that point about all the different tendencies within the church and what that means. I mean, you really have very different thoughts even from the bishops of Africa and the bishops then in much of Latin America, and here in the United States, where the Pope silenced a bishop who was questioned certain things that the Pope didn't like in his term. And so where do you think this is going? I mean, Rosemary, why don't you kick this off? I mean, what do you think the church is going to have to face? I mean, there's a lot going on. How does it rebuild? How does it build? Is it going to be torn? What's going to happen?
Well, it's probably astonishing to people, but I am 60 years old, and I believe in the church. I do. I believe in my church.
I know you do.
I love my church, and I fight my church too, because I think that to be authentic in the world is to be in struggle. And I think that what the church is going to go through is struggle. And you know, giving birth to a baby or having a flower come out of the earth takes struggle. And I think if we're authentic and we start to name the issues, I think we're going to find that we're struggling with one another, but we're going to do it in the name of justice, in the name of Jesus, who lived a truly revolutionary, nonviolent life. And he was very clear about it. He was clear about what our goals and priorities are supposed to be. And I think that, you know, hopefully that we're going to have people who are going to want to see the spirit of Vatican II come back, that we open up the windows and we tell the truth and we ask the Holy Spirit to come in and guide us. And, you know, I think that there's great hope for us. I really do. And I think sometimes that that maybe that sounds uncomfortable to other people, but I've staked my life on it. And I think it's there. And I think I was saying to Mark that it's not unlike the Occupy movement. I think that people are really wanting to come from the ground up and tired of the top-down authority and start having our own authority as our authority as brothers and sisters, as children of God.
Mary Jo, I'm curious, from your perch in El Salvador, seeing South America, how do you perceive the question I asked?
I'm thinking that it sounds kind of anodyne, but there's such richness in diversity of thought, mm-hmm. of intellectual thought. And, you know, the first trick of journalism is listen, listen, listen. If there were more emphasis on our listening to each other, you know, one of the maybe people remember 6 Jesuit priests were killed by a U.S.-created elite unit here in El Salvador in 1989. One of the priests that was out was very – well, they were all very much with the Church of the Poor. And I had one of those who was deceased tell me once upon a time, I said, how do you come around to this, the Church of the Poor? How do you – he says – you don't come around to it. You don't study it. You listen and you are taught. You are taught by the other, especially by the poor. And I think that's what John the 23rd was trying to tell us. Let's all get in there and mix it up and listen to each other. And I think the problem comes up when there are the sanctions and when there is the condemnation and when there is the assumption of political motivation behind people's expression of their faith. We got to let go, I think, of some of those things if we're going to make it all work in the 21st century. And I think we will.
Monsignor?
I agree with much of what we've heard, but I also would say that, you know, we don't want to think of the church in terms of politics. The church ultimately transcends the political and the here and now. It's not a matter of going to the right or going to the left. The church has to go deeper. It's to go deeper into the mystery of God's love for us and how we reflect that in a world that is less and less open to hearing the message of mercy. Ultimately, Jesus came to reveal to the world the merciful love of the Father, and we need to reflect that. But for us to do that as a community and as individuals, we have to enter deeper into the mystery of Christ on a personal level, personal holiness and sanctity, and then as a community to live that out more authentically and more fully. That's why, you know, the announcement of the Pope's resignation right before Lent gives the church, tomorrow we start Lent with Ash Wednesday, gives the church a time communally and individually to begin that process of going deeper and finding real solutions to the spiritual issues that face us, because ultimately all the problems that face us at their root have a spiritual ailment that needs to be healed before we can hope to have healing in our politics and our cities and between nation states.
Let me just read this, and with all due respect, I just want to read this one piece that was written today in the New York Times, which some many of you might have seen it, by John Patrick Shanley, who has written many plays like Doubt and many others, and as a person who grew up in the church. And I can hear my mother telling me to read it, so I'm going to read this from the grave. Their years in the convent. He writes, I watched the wealth of the Catholic Church turn into a subsidy for wrongdoing, and people can disagree with this, I just want to throw it out here, into a subsidy for wrongdoing and a proper continuing campaign against women's rights and homosexuality. Neighborhood churches built with the hard-earned money of working-class people are being sold off. The sacrifices that we made to build these churches were significant and local. The decision to close them has been made antiseptically by remote control. The men who make decisions are at a remove, very much involved in protecting their power and comfort. I have little reason to hope that the Church of Rome will suddenly realize that without women, the Catholic Church is doomed and should be doomed. I think of all those good nuns who educated me, of their lifelong devotion and sacrifice. They have been treated like cattle by a crowd of domineering fools. In Benedict, the Catholic Church got the Pope it deserved. I know this is hard for some people to hear. I just want to read it because this is what some people do think. Let's wrestle with it for a minute. I can only hope for the sake of my parents, who love the Church so much, that a miracle of divine grace alters the writing on the wall. If not, the Catholic Church will suffer the fate. He writes it deserves. For whether they agree with that or not, I think that for a minute, let's just think about that. And I mean, this, I guess what I'm pausing here is I think that the Church, like many other institutions on the planet, are facing a real crisis of the future. Because how you... Go ahead.
Monsignor,
obviously, go
ahead. The women should probably respond first to this, but I can't let that go without saying that it's libelous to some extent. First of all, 80% of the people who work for the Church are women. So it's impossible for him to say that we're ignoring the women. The women, any church or organization I've been involved with, if the women weren't there, there wouldn't be hardly any of us around. Very few men are involved in the paid professional jobs of the church. That first of all. Second, I've been involved in the very painful process of consolidating parishes in inner cities in my own diocese. When I was pastor, I had to be involved in one. And if done well, and with consulting the people, it can be done. And in many, many places throughout the United States, it was done well. And the people came to understand, and there's always a pain involved in such change. But the alternative is to have either unsafe buildings or economically unfeasible ways of doing ministry. We want to, you know, liberate the resources to serve building up the kingdom, building up the gospel. Has it been done wrong, inappropriately in some places? Of course, mistakes are made. There's no doubt about that. But the vast majority of this throughout the country has been done fairly well. It's only the occasional mistake that gets the notoriety. So I think the writer is being unfair in characterizing both the closing and the ignoring of women. For all practical purposes, in the United States at least, women run the church.
May I say something?
Please go ahead, Mary Jo.
I really appreciate that, especially about the consolidation of the churches. It must be very, very difficult to be in that position. I do want to offer, though, that the fact that so many women are paid help in the church, I think misses the point, which is that as one woman who became a priest said, you know, I always knew there was a place for women on the altar besides in a coffin. And I think it's going to happen. I believe it's going to happen. I have seen so many women who yearn for a place on the altar. And I don't think it's something to walk away from the church over. I think it's something to stay within the church over and rejoice as these things happen, little by little.
A quick thought about, should we get another caller in here? We have like 2.5 minutes left. Can we get a quick comment from a caller? Is that all right with everybody?
Yeah.
D, you're on the air. We have like 2.5 minutes left, love. I'm sorry we have to get you so late. Go ahead.
Okay, quite quickly, Mark, to challenge to Monsignor, I'm sorry, sir, with all due respect, when O'Brien stepped up and gave the benediction at the Republican convention, that burst forth from the fairy tale that the church is above politics. No, I'm terribly sorry, it isn't. Mark, the visual of looking at the College of Cardinals march in reminds me of the Republican convention, one picture being worth a thousand words. The church needs to acknowledge and refashion itself as a responsive institution that is now being run, just like the Republican Party, by old, white, powerful, rich men who are out of touch with their constituency. And just like the Republicans, they will have to find themselves available to acknowledge the shift in their constituency. Until they do that, just like the Republicans, they'll be looking at methodology and all sorts of ways to get around the true issue that the population the dynamics of the population have changed completely.
Dee, thank you so much for your call. We have like a minute left. I'd like to let Rosemary have a thought, and we can get back to Monsignor. We will, Rosemary.
I guess my thought is that, you know, what I'm looking to is the younger generation, and I want to know how we best reflect them, that they're our hope and our future. And if we can't include them, if we're doing things that are not making them feel included, we are, as an entity, going to die. And so my hope and dream is that we do start to really work towards the moment that we are reflecting all of God's creatures. And I think that the hope is there, and I think the possibilities are there, but it's going to take work.
This has been a very intense and an important discussion. We look to have more as we follow up to see who the new pontiff will be. We'll be covering this with some interest over the next month and bringing our guests back and others on as well. I want to thank you. Just heard Rosemary Thompson, Executive Director of the Murphy Initiative, for being with us. Great to see you, Rosemary.
Thanks.
Thank you for coming. Monsignor Stuart Swetland, Vice President of Catholic Identity at Mount St. Mary's University, thank you so much for being part of our show today.
Thank you, Mark.
It's been an honor to have you. Mary Jo McConaughey, I want to thank you, author of Maya Rhodes, One Woman's Journey, which we tagged to in our book and on our Facebook page. Thank you so much for joining us from El Salvador.
Thank you.
And thank all of our other guests and callers for being part of the show. We're going to take a brief break and come back. We're going to look at what's going on in California. Breaking news is happening there where Chris Dorner is cornered in a cabin. Two officers have been shot in a gunfire battle in the woods. We're going to be talking with people from California and other places about that case, what emotions is rising up, and what's actually happening at the moment on the ground in California. Stay with us. We'll be right back.